Welcome to the Round 7 Supercoach Coach Podcast. Behind the scenes, there's been a lot of work going into just trying to get the audio to connect. But we have him. Welcome, FB Donkey from the road. If you're tuning in on YouTube, you're in a car right now.
Welcome. Literally in my car. Been on the road for about 10 days and we've already had a breakdown and we're stuck in a rural town in Victoria for a few days. But life's good. We got to watch the Bombers yesterday. Bombers won. Yeah, doing all right.
We kind of need like a segment, right? Like, you know, Mike's Tales from the Road. So highlight from your last week, mate, or your last 10 days.
We've been on the Murray for most of the last 10 days. That's been pretty good. Some free camping and in Mildura at the moment. We went to Orange World yesterday. There was a guy named Mario and he remembered, like, we were on a train with like 20 people and he remembered every single person's name within like half an hour. I thought that was pretty impressive.
Nice. Orange World. All right. You've got a tip for anybody on the road or out that way. And you had good news too with your Bombers getting up for a win. Happy days.
Yeah, it was a bloody good win, mate. Peter Wright killed it. We had Parrish. Unbelievable game. Maybe the best game by any player this year. Jaden Laverde looked good. It was 42 touches, 2 goals, mate. There haven't been too many better performances than that.
And Geelong obviously had a good win. So I'm in good spirits too. Finally played some good football for the year. And I guess we'll stop giving team updates before we turn too many of our listeners out. You're coming for hot Supercoach advice. So why don't we do our around the grounds, mate? How did you actually score in Supercoach? Was it as good a week?
No. So I got 1 point less than last week, 21.58. Dropped to 15,000th. I've just been hovering around that rank for 3 or 4 weeks now. It's not a hot start, but I'm still in an okay position to come back. But yeah, things haven't really been going my way. I had a donut this week, first donut for the year with the defensive troubles that people are facing.
Ugh, I've got to say, I finally had a good week. So sorry, you're going to have to sit through this. Broke the 2,300 mark. It could have been... I haven't looked back, but I think this may be my high score for the year, which is weird in the round that has been. I think it was only in the top 5,000 scores overall. So it was good, but still not that amazing. And I guess that's what happens when CJ, Impey, and Taylor Walker continue to kill it. You don't have them. And you don't have Max Gorn either. You know what? Still happy. Moving up, catching up to you, Mark. I'm now ranked a couple thousand places behind you, so I must be narrowing the gap. Very happy about that. And we're resilient. We've played this game for 14, 15 years, and it's a grind, and you take different positions each year, and clearly some of our starting positions need some recovery. And, you know, I think that's the good part about being an experienced coach. You know, all this chaos that's going on, it's really an opportunity for us to make our mark with the 25 trades and fight our way up there. And that's the tale of the tape for us as a show. You know, even if we're not killing it from the start, we're still going to try and help you get there to the top 1,000 and still firmly in our sights, even if we're not smashing it at the moment. You know, still got some positivity in us.
And there does seem a few butterfly wing moments at the moment where one decision is going to have a huge consequence in like 15 weeks. So we're thinking, okay, let's make a trade. Let's look at immediate results. Let's get that immediate feedback. But realistically, a lot of people are side swapping. A lot of people are trading out rookies really cheaply. There's going to be some people bringing in rookies off one game. And a lot of these decisions that we're making at the moment are going to have huge impacts around 15 to 20 when we're looking to try and get fully upgraded.
Things can change in a short period of time. Cozzy was probably looking like a good trade out. And on the weekend, you could say certainly got lucky. He's kicked 5 goals. I was expecting a 20 on field. And he kicked, you know, 104 points. So things can change rather quickly. But then on the flip side, obviously some duds as well on the weekend. And so especially with the amount of injuries mounting up. And gee, how many of these, was it syndesmosis injuries? Jeez, they're rife.
Funny, I hadn't even heard that word 2 years ago. And now everyone in the AFL has it and seems to be out for extended periods with it.
A lot of people seeming to go in for surgery to get it cleared up. Lachie Neale this week has just been announced that he's going in. But we've had some bad luck elsewhere as well. Josh Dunkley obviously going in for shoulder surgery. He's going to be a while out as well. And then Dusty Martin concussed. He's going to miss one, and I think they revealed that he's been playing Saw as well. So you know, started the year on fire. We talked about, you know, not going to Vegas and that being awesome, and then all of a sudden, that is one thing to keep in mind. When people are on a hot run or on a cold run, injuries can change things very quickly in AFL football. It'll give people more opportunities that may not have had it before, and yeah, will be interesting to see how that shakes things up a little bit. Well, one thing that hasn't changed is Patrick Cripps and his efficiency at the bloody ball. Oh, 64, I mean, that's one of the decent trades you got getting rid of him. Please deliver me a 150 so he can go up in price and I can turf you, Patrick. I need to get rid of you.
So getting rid of Patty Cripps, and I don't think I've been on the show since I did a Neil to Gorn, which after 1 week, Neil belted out a 140. It was not looking great, and then looks pretty good this week.
Because your other trade-in target was going to be Josh Dunkley. Imagine if you had done that. So. Yes,
and the only way that I can beat teams that have Josh Dunkley is for Josh Dunkley to get injured, because he has been scoring unbelievably this year.
Boo to that. Boo to that. Unsurprisingly, this week's hot topics, dealing with all these
Forward
injuries.
Trading.
So last week we talked about early upgrades. I don't know if you heard the show, Mark. I mean, it was definitely early. It's not the recommended pattern, but there were a few rookies that probably stuttered a little bit. Brandon Campbell ended up probably not being the worst trade out. Jordan Clark ended up being the med sub. It was a bit of bad news, wasn't there, over the weekend? But anyway, a few people executed early upgrades, and they would have been pretty happy if they did that, because with the amount of injuries we have this week, a lot of people are actually going to be looking at side swaps and therefore being unable to go one up, one down. So depending on who you are, injuries may be forcing your first upgrade to next week, which is probably 1 week slower than ideal. I guess pre-round 7, 4 price movements generally look at one upgrade, but it's not the end of the world because everyone's in the same boat. I know there's been some talk on Twitter asking for more trades, and even though I think that I don't mind the AFL fantasy rule of having trades every single week, and especially with the variety last year and this year has been throwing up and all those sorts of things, I don't hate that rule. I've warmed to it. You know, at the same time, once the rule's been set for the start of the year, we kind of have to roll with the punches. We can't change the rules of the game as we go along. We had a very specific reason to last year with changes in fixtures. And maybe if North and Frio got canned, we could have had a legitimate reason that maybe people will be hoping for some rescheduling.
I can't imagine us getting any more trades this year unless we have a crazy pandemic delay. So get used to dealing with the trades that you've got, and it doesn't seem like we've got enough. And I think I mentioned earlier in the season that people were trading as if it was last year and you just had max trades every week, and that's going to bite people who come later in the year. And these injuries really suck and they're making it hard, but I think it's being really compounded by the lack of rookie scoring well. So potentially we had some really good starts to the year for some of these rookies and they looked really good, like the Gouldens of the world, and looked like we were going to be fine. But I think a lot of people are now carrying a bunch of dead rookies on the bench.
Yeah, and I guess also probably getting us to think a little bit more around how much value you need to extract with the trades, right? So the more limited you are with the number of trades you have to upgrade because you're using them to deal with injuries, it means that you have to be a little bit more strict with yourself in terms of how much cash you're getting out per upgrade, right? If I only have 20 trades for upgrades because I have to deal with 10 for injuries. Some people have talked about having 7 injuries already so far this season. So if you allow for 3 more for the rest of the season, you actually only have 20 trades. One up, one down means you can only upgrade 10 players. And so if you all of a sudden are needing to do 2 ground grades to bring one guy up, what does that do to your ability to actually finish your team? How will this play out in terms of the buys, right? That's something to think about. I think you probably need to take a little bit more serious look around how your buys are starting to stack up, because you might not have the same flexibility to side swap around the buys and get extra players on you. Thinking a lot more about job security of rookies versus scoring potential of rookies heading into the buys, because you might not be able to afford more trades for side swapping and working around donuts, etc. So interesting times. And I guess we'll break it down as the season goes on, and certainly we get some bonus time in our Patreon podcast to do a little bit of extra high-level strategy content as well. So if you're keen for that, don't forget you can join us on Patreon. And as we do each week, we're going to call out the top Patreon of our Patreon group. And this week, that's Travis's team, Styling and Profiling. He's 138th at the moment,
wow,
with a massive score of 2364, catapulting him up the ranks. So absolutely killing it. Big score. Very, very exciting stuff. So congrats to Travis. And let's get on to some questions, Mark. So first one for the week from David on Facebook. Is Dusty a keeper? So I think in the context of everything we've described, Dusty's out for 1 week. The 39 sucks, but do not trade Justin Martin. Unfortunately, it's a little bit painful, but I think the fact that they talk about him being slightly affected by injury, hopefully he comes back with a cleaner run of health. And there's a lot of chatter around. It's hard to pick the top six forwards this year. The bar looks to have dropped in the forward line. Dusty is a clear top three, probably you'd say still at this stage. So he's not somebody that you want to touch.
Yeah, I think when I saw that question, I went looking for more injury news on Dusty that he was going to be out for longer. But 1 week, you got to keep him, especially with all the carnage going on around us. I just don't think you can be training players off 1 week injuries, even if it, we have heard now that he's been carrying a foot for a little while. Hopefully the time off heals him a little bit.
Yeah, even 2 weeks you keep, right? Three is about the borderline, but with the injury stacking up, three is becoming a more tempting option for a keep. And I think at the start, you know, when Dangerfield went down, three was an easier move on potentially, because not just because we haven't seen the injuries play out, but because upgrading or trading then didn't affect your upgrading cadence. But we're now into upgrade season officially. This really is the first week generally. So you want to be minimizing how much you're playing around with your rookies, especially because a lot of people have to deal with Dunkley and with Lachie Neale already. So with that, we'll move on to the next question, and we'll go to this one from Yort50 or at Troy Danaher on Twitter. Hey guys, looking for best forward options now that Dunkley is out and Dusty's struggling and the injuries are mounting. Those two and Dangerfield, clear standouts for top six forwards. I think I've always penciled Rowan Marshall in there, but waiting for him to come back from injury. I think arguably at 550 with a 50 in his first score, like, you'd like him to play next week, go down in price, and then maybe buy him at that point, ideally. You might go early on him. I think he for me, is the other guy that I definitely want in my team, and especially for those rookie R2 owners. If you've got Fullerton and Treacy, you want Rowan Marshall in as soon as he's ready, so that if Flynn gets dropped again, you've got a pivot and you've reestablished the premium R2, and you can then go, you know, swanning along and not have to worry as much about Max Gorn and wait for him to hit his tougher run of ruck opposition instead of playing all the second tier ruckmen or third tier ruckmen that he's playing at the moment.
Have you got Dunkley, Marcus?
Yeah, I got Dunkley.
Okay, so given you are in the Flynn Treacy situation, the temptation must be very high just to go Marshall early.
Marshall's break even is 146. So if he scores 132 again, he stays at a very similar price. He plays Hawthorn this week, and I think Riley O'Brien had a decent game against Ben McAvoy this weekend. Yes, I would be pretty tempted to do that, actually. They've got Gold Coast the week after that, then Geelong, all not particularly strong ruckmen. Then they get into Western Bulldogs and North, so probably a little bit more serious. But the next three, that's a pretty good run for Marshall. The other reason I was thinking about waiting on Marshall is just that, in case there's still some lingering injury concerns.
Yeah, I think that's the big one.
You know, the stress fractures aren't particularly great. So with a 57 in his price cycle, I don't know, I'm still pretty tempted to hold on for another week, maybe look for an upgrade elsewhere and then hit Marshall the week after that. So it's more the injury concern that has me a little bit tentative on Marshall, even though he did score 130. Do you think that's being a bit too conservative?
Look what we saw week one. St Kilda have been pretty rubbish this year. I think that the injury concern, the fact that he struggled coming back and was like a late out, that means it's pretty real and you should be potentially patient. It's just your very specific situation would scream for someone like Marshall to come into your team.
Yes, I cannot wait. So at least he was back playing and showed a 130. Would have been a lot more nervous if he came back and scored another sub 60. Then he'll like, where do I go from here? So yeah, R2 owners, you're definitely very keen on him. So who else do we have outside of him? The guys that we've talked about before, Steel Sidebottom and Dane Zorko, right? It seems pretty obvious. They play in the midfield. Zorko's obviously going to get even more opportunity with Neale being out for a little while. Steel Sidebottom, I think he played, I think you got 88% of centre bounce attendances across the weekend. So he's definitely right up there in terms of a trade-in target as well. I think he scored 110 plus. Those two seem to stand out for me. Steele especially, he's dropped 95,000 already. I've earmarked him from a while out. Yes, he is 30, but doesn't mean he has to drop off. Obviously, Treloar leaving the midfield last year is probably a good thing for him. I think 95 over the last few years has proven to be a flaw for him, which basically with this year, 95 would still be passable. Very 490K, possible. He has some value, but his upside could be 105, 110, right? That's probably a bit optimistic with where Collingwood are at the moment. Yeah. But yeah, both of them seem like good options to me. Zorko's still cheap at the moment because he's not had the best run as well. You know, but he's still averaging 95. I think I mentioned a couple of weeks ago, a lot of free kicks against. He's tidied that up a little bit the last 2 weeks and hit tons. Yeah, they both seem like really obvious options to me.
Yeah, I totally agree. I think that one of them two guys is absolutely obvious. They have the upside, they have the history. It's really weird looking at their stats that both of them have a really similar durability history. Both of them have very similar scoring histories. Both of them have a key midfielder that's injured at the moment and is going to give them more centre bounce midfield time, potentially similar ages. Like there's a lot of similarities between the picks and it's probably pretty hard to split them. I know you've already got Zorko, Marcus. I think just on side bottom building, I'd probably just lean towards side bottom, but realistically, they're your two guys if you've got Dunkley, and flip a coin or pick your favourite one out of the two.
I obviously started Zorko ahead of side bottom, and Zorko's still slightly cheaper, so I think it'd be silly for me to not go to Zorko, especially with Neil going down as well. But yeah, I'd have side bottom a pretty close second.
If you don't have Jack Zeeble now, given his scoring so far, is he someone that you would consider even potentially ahead of those two guys?
He's only 60k more, so you would have to say yes. Like, he's just playing one of the most lucrative roles at the moment. He's had three scores above 148. Like, he's one of the top scoring players in the comp, full stop. He's averaging more than Brody Grundy. I think you did say that he's still cheap for the average that he's pumping out at the moment. I think most of our coaches will have him, but still interesting question, and I'd say yes to that. How about you?
I think it'd be hard to resist. So Zeeble doesn't have the durability history quite so much or the scoring record of the other two, but like you say, three big 150-plus scores already, that's pretty hard to resist.
North are going to get pumped a little bit. Sorry, North supporters, but for the rest of the year, right? They're just going to keep giving the ball to him. So, yes. Anyway, outside of those guys, and I think not everyone would have Zorko side bottom. I think it's probably pretty easy to pick one of those two, but maybe a couple of guys still worth mentioning. So there's Toby Green. We've talked about him a little bit before, clearly continuing to be very, very dominant player. He keeps this up, right? He's got another All-Australian belt underneath him and clearly relishing the role as the new captain on field. I think he's not a very vocal person off the field, and so that's why I think he was probably not made captain ahead of Cornelio previously. But it almost feels like, therefore, when he goes on field, he's like, this is where I lead, baby. And he's playing pretty special brand of football at the moment. I normally don't attach a heap to the captaincy, but for a guy who's got a bit of strut about him, I kind of feel like it'd make a bit of difference. I've picked Green in the past. I don't mind picking him again. Injury and suspension is always a concern, but maybe as a captain, he's a bit more disciplined. Who knows? I don't hate the Green selection as well. And he's one that there's a 160 around the corner somewhere, right? There's maybe a poor score around the corner somewhere as well, especially with GWS maybe not doing so well. You'd love to pick Green when GWS were contending for a top four spot versus where they are now as a club. But I think Green has taken his game to potentially another level. If he didn't kick one goal seven, he'd be averaging, you know, more than 100 right now from his game a couple of weeks ago. So I don't mind him as well. And then we've got Tom McDonald. He's still arguably fairly cheap at the moment. He's 430,000. He's had one score being a 50, but outside of that, 94, 87, 89, 136, 109. Now, key position forwards are always more fraught with danger, but he comes with that discount. This year, we're worried about the bottom end of the top six not being as high, which may push somebody with a 95 average in there. We've seen Tom Hawkins average a large amount playing a more contested brand, which Tom McDonald can certainly do. We've seen Tom McDonald pump out big scores before, and Melbourne are 6-0, and it depends on how you feel about Melbourne. Lots of people have looked at Melbourne and gone, they're going to do well, and then they've capitulated a bit before. But if they can keep this sort of football up, being a key position forward with a midfield that they have, what do you think about him?
I think, is Ben Brown still like a thing at Melbourne? Is he likely to come in at some stage? And they've also got Sam Wiedemann,
yep,
playing well in the VFL, and he would be coming into that part of his career where he would be expecting to get games. Those two guys potentially worry me a little bit with McDonald longer term. I think that there are some risks attached to that one. Toby, yep, Green, I agree with everything you said. The captain thing probably makes him less likely to get suspended, which is potentially a reason to pick him. There's not a heap of others, though. Like
Shai Bolton is another one that's interesting. He did have a 29 in round three, but he's getting some midfield time at Richmond, available as a mid forward. His other games, apart from that 29, 85, 88, and then his last three, 110, 110, 99. And based on his talent, there's no reason why he couldn't improve again this season. You are punting on a breakout there, whereas I guess the other two have a previous established form that you might look to. Chad Wingard got 50% of centre bounce attendances, so that's interesting at Hawthorn, but I probably wouldn't have him ahead of any of the guys we've talked about so far. And then interesting with the Geelong key position forward. So if Geelong start to hit their straps a little bit, we've seen Tom Hawkins defy the odds a little bit as one of the rare key position forwards who's averaged a bit. He's now dropped 104K, 464,000. He's probably going to enjoy finally having a second foil. Not having Asava Radagalia or Jeremy Cameron throughout the years clearly hurt him, and getting double teamed a little bit more. And so with the field being stretched a little bit more, I don't hate that selection. And then if you really want to go ballsy, obviously Jezza Cameron, 388K, some risk there as well, but he's averaged 95 before as well, so certainly some value on offer there. This is the interesting part about the forward line, I think, is that you can potentially try and take, you know, some more alternative risks, because F6 and F5 maybe are a little bit more up for contention, especially with a lot of injuries for a while. No Dangerfield, no Dunkley, so you got Rowan Marshall, Martin, Steel Sidebottom, and Zorko. Then you got still, you know, two free agents there to take a little bit more risk. I'd say that potentially, if you are worried about cash generation, those are two spots that you can try and save a little bit of money on, and it probably won't burn you so badly by the end of the year, even if you don't hit the perfect selection. And if you do, it could really be quite an inspired move that can make a pretty big difference.
This year, you could potentially just go for a really cheap forward line. You've got Isaac Heaney with a huge break even at 410,000. You could pick him up for 350. Jezza Cameron for 380. Degoe will be under 300 next week. Potentially, you could do three player upgrades to under $400,000 players that have been premiums in the past or close enough to in the forward line this year, given the scoring deficits. And you could potentially then be able to get to a fully upgraded team earlier. It's just we're going to need to go down that route or not. So you'd be committing to a type of strategy by going super cheap on some of those players.
I think sub 500 is generally good enough that I don't see myself needing to try and pull an extra 100K. So I'm still probably in the Zorko, Sidebottom, Rowan Marshall camp for now and trying to go for the upside.
But the thing with Dunkley is you're still getting over 100,000 by going to one of those guys. So you are still getting some cash for that next upgrade.
We did have a question from at the Supercoach Bull on full primo versus looking for some undervalued picks. So I guess just to finish off this section and to round out what we've been talking about, full primo or undervalue for you, Mark?
I think it depends a little bit on the week. So if the rookie situation improves, then my opinion would change. At the moment, it very feels like you're going to have to get some value into that team, and you might be able to aim for one, two, maybe three of the absolute top liners that are not coming at a discount, but you'll struggle to do more than that.
Next question, let's take this one from Lethal Lee. So let's talk about downgrades quickly. Best downgrade option across any position, and is Finlay McRae a trap? Scored, I think, in the 30s this week. He's a little bit worried about cash generation with some rookies like Highmore and Waterman not playing.
So I watched all of that game, obviously, the Collingwood Bombers game, and I had to bring Finlay McRae in to my team a week early in order to avoid donuts. And I can honestly say I did not notice him once. That's not a good sign.
I think he attended a few center bounces, like 12%. But yeah, his impact on the ground wasn't particularly great. He seemed to hang off the packs a little bit more rather than crash in, which probably makes sense with the way his brother plays and potentially his body type a little bit more at this stage of his career, which it doesn't bode as well. Like if your team's doing well and dishing the ball out to you, that's great. But when your team's now 1-5, maybe that's not as good a spot to be in.
I guess you get to a certain point where you have to take what's available, though, right? If McRae's picked again this week, there's not a lot of other options out there.
Did play 77% of time on ground. That's still definitely a positive in that camp. Who else is available and available that maybe isn't too expensive? Connor Menadue, I think he's averaging 77, but he's 201,000. Atu Bossom Vilagi, averaging 67, but he's more expensive as well, 175,000. You just paid for a bit more expensive rookie just this last week, Mark. You brought in Robertson.
I did. And at halftime, I think it was on 71 or something. Yeah, I don't hate it. You wouldn't want to do it very often, though, especially those 200,000 priced guys. That does make a big difference when you're getting to upgrade season, the extra 70,000 in your bank. And it depends whether they're playing on field. You certainly don't want to be playing more than 150,000 for someone to sit on your bench. And I probably don't love picking the guys from North. I don't know about you.
Yeah, if they're expensive, you probably want them either with fantastic job security, not two of the first six games, or with high scoring potential, which North obviously presents a risk on. And they may be cycling through players a little bit just to see who's sort of doing well and giving kids a chance. So yeah, those are pretty fair call outs for that price tag. We did have a debutante on the weekend from Port Adelaide, Martin Frederick. But I guess just more generally with Port Adelaide players, their team's pretty well established, so longer term job security is probably something to have a little bit of a think about. And he's a backline rookie, which is probably the main issue. Highmore and Jones are clogging up my D7 and D8 at the moment, and I'd suggest most people with similarly thin backlines probably don't have the ability to have a bit of a think about Martin yet. And certainly seems like the type of team where you'd like them to play at least two games and then bringing them in when they're named for the third. Miles Bergman played two and then got dropped and then is now obviously back in with some injuries to halfbacks. But Finlay McRae, though, to your point, at least from a job security standpoint, even if he's not playing continuously, you'd think he'd continue to get opportunities at Collingwood with the way they're going at the moment.
Yeah, so I think that if he's named this week, you're probably in a situation you just have to hope that he gets net games and gets a bit better with his scoring as those games continue.
I mean, something to probably keep in mind, I guess, is you might not have to go with him if you have Josh Dunkley or Neil to deal with and you're downgrading. So, you know, if I go Dunkley down to a 490K player in Zorko or Sidebottom, that leaves me with 140K. So if I have another 100K in bank, is pretty close to an upgrade elsewhere on your team. So if you're really not wanting to take the risk on Finlay this week, you may not be forced to. So I'm personally probably going to pass this week. I ended up keeping money in bank last week because I didn't get to see whether or not Highmore or Cozzy would get a game. And if they didn't, I would have had a donut. And so I would have had to find a way to bring them up to a premium. And so with my 300K in bank plus this 140, that's my upgrade cash. So I'm not looking at Finlay this week, and potentially not everyone with the injury situation will be forced into a rookie this week.
Probably a good week to be, yeah, it's probably a good week to be skipping having to pick a rookie.
Thank you, Mark. Yeah, yeah, it's all foresight really. Yeah. Maybe last question and then a quick captain's corner. So this one is from Heath Little. Is it worth thinking about swinging Dunkley into the midfield? And we got some other questions about swimming in potentially even to the back line with the forwards doing so poor at the moment and just taking a little bit more of a bona fide premium elsewhere and then, you know, running a thinner forward line considering they're not great scorers anyway. I have certainly looked at it. Just because I have a lot of cash in bank, I'm probably not in a similar situation. As I mentioned, I'll have 450 this week. So I'm probably incentivized to take somebody who's a little bit more rolled gold. If I was lower on cash, then I think I would still be tempted just to take a forward premium this week because in the back line, I think Stephen May is an interesting value proposition next week, and then Ridley will be the week after that. So considering most people have pretty stacked backlines already, it's nice to keep a value play up your sleeve if you wanted to take it in future rounds in other positions. So I don't necessarily want to complete my backline yet. And in the midfield, there's nobody who screams value to me at the moment. So I either have to pay a lot for McRae type, which if I'm not as sure about cash generation at this point in time, I may not want to do now. So I'd rather probably take a Zorko or sub 500K. You get a likely top six target. I think the forward line is actually probably the safer place to spend money on this week. So that's probably where I'd go.
Okay, because there are those two obvious picks sort of screaming out to be picked a little bit.
Mm.
What about if you were just dealing with Neil this week? You didn't have Dunkley. Would you consider potentially Zorko side bottom?
Oh, are you talking about just replacing them and playing Zorko or Sidebottom in the midfield?
Just temporarily until you can do a midfield upgrade later, just because potentially Sidebottom, Zorko are more obvious picks this week.
with Dunkley, you maybe don't want to weaken your forward line too much more, because who else are you putting on? Like, are you putting a rookie on field? Whereas if you're trading the guy out and he's in your midfield, I don't know if I'd necessarily look to intentionally swap him into the forward line. In that particular instance, if you could afford it, I'd rather just take a premium in that particular spot. More because I think I would like to spend another week to do a wait and see on Rowan Marshall. Like, I'd much prefer just to pick Rowan Marshall in that spot. So I think that's probably what's influencing me a little bit at the moment. If I could take an extra week and make the choice next week, I'd ideally just take Rowan Marshall ahead of Steele Sidebottom and not take the punt on him. Like, Zorko and Sidebottom still have some injury risk, and they have the tendency to have a poor game. Like, they have a chance to be at 450k, and so 490 is good value. But I think I wouldn't weaken my forward line with Dunkley, but I wouldn't necessarily trade into a forward from my midfield. I'd probably just want another equivalently strong option to Lachie Neale. It feels weird to say, because I've been talking about hunting for value, but I think the team shape probably is playing a little bit of a part there. Do you think that makes sense, or is that off advice?
No, I think that that makes sense, especially, I guess, with Neale, that you could potentially get a Sam Walsh, or there's potentially some other obvious midfield targets this week.
Yeah, let's finish with a captain's corner, Mark. We haven't done this for a little while, and so I might be putting you on the spot a little bit. Funny enough, Jack Zeeble has been talked about as a potential VCC option now with those three huge scores. They're playing Melbourne this week. So they're $15 and Melbourne's $1.03 for this weekend. Obviously, plenty of ball going into that back line. Would you think about Zeeble at all?
I guess it depends what the other options. I'm looking at McRae and Gawn pretty much most weeks. Yeah, I'd want to give it to Gawn in that game.
I think that probably makes sense if you have Gawn. Grundy owners, he probably seems like the standout for me. Playing Gold Coast, obviously, with no established ruck. So I think VC on Grundy and almost certainly to take him. If I was forced forward and I had Gawn, that makes sense. Grundy into Gawn. Otherwise, I really don't mind Zeeble in that particular spot. I think he's going such great guns. And the kickouts, like, they're free points. So unless North somehow win the game, he's got plenty of free points. So that's probably what I'll roll with for now.
He's probably likely to get a score you either take or you don't. So he's probably likely to get a 150 or a 100, and that makes your decision easy with a vice captain.
McRae versus Grundy, if you're in that situation for VC?
Not totally trusting Grundy every week still. I'm unhappy to go with McRae at the moment. Doggies are just getting so much ball in that midfield.
Well, it's been fantastic having a chat with you from the road, Mark. Where to next week?
Heading to Flinders Rangers next week and then off to Uluru after that. This time next week, I think we'll be in Coober Pedy, and there's not a lot to do in Coober Pedy, so I may be free for the podcast.
Cool. Awesome. Well, thanks for joining us, mate. Good luck to you and good luck to our listeners. See you all next week. Bye.
See ya. Don't want this get crazy. Don't want this get crazy. Let's get crazy.